नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So today we read from Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter entitled What Prahlad Learned in the Womb. This is Canto 7, chapter 7, text 23. Dehas tu sarva sangato jagat tastur iti dveda atraiva mirgya puruso niti 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 ata tvajyan. Dehastu sarva sangato jagatastu iti dvida atraiva mirgha puruso niti titi ata tvajyan. Dehastu sarva sangato jagatastu iti dvida atraiva mirgya puruso niti niti ji atatva jan. Anybody want to chant? Sarva sangato Deha, the body, to but sarva sangata, the combination of all the 24 elements, jagat, seen to be moving, tasto, and standing in one place, iti, thus, dvida, two kinds, atraiva, in this matter, mirgya, to be searched for, purusha, the living entity, the soul, na, not, iti, sorry, yeah, iti thus, na, not, iti thus, iti in this way, ata, what is that spirit, tvajyan, giving up, Translation and Prabhupada by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Did I say Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya? Don't remember. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Translation and purport. There are two kinds of bodies for every individual soul. A gross... A gross body made of five gross elements and a subtle body made of three subtle elements. Within these bodies, however, is the spirit soul. One must find the soul by analysis, saying, this is not it, this is not it. Thus, one must separate spirit from matter. Please repeat. There are two kinds of bodies for every individual soul. A gross body made of five gross elements and a subtle body made of three subtle elements. Within these bodies, however, is the spirit soul. One must find the soul by analysis, saying, this is not it. Thus one must separate spirit from matter. Proverb. As previously stated, Swarnam tata gravaslo hema karachitreso yogaistad abhigyan apnoyat. An expert in the study of soil can find out where gold is and then dig there. He can then analyze the stone and test the gold with nitric acid. Similarly, one must analyze the whole body to find within the body, the spirit soul. In studying one's own body, one must ask himself whether his head is his soul, his finger are his soul, his hands is his soul, and so on. In this way, one must gradually reject all the material elements and the combinations of material elements in the body. Then, if one is expert and follow the Acharya, he can understand that he is the spirit soul living within the body. The greatest Acharya, Krishna, began his teaching in Bhagavad Gita by saying, Deino asmin yata dehi kaumaram yauvanam jara tata dihantara praptir diras tata namu yate. As the embodied souls continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change. Bhagavad Gita 2:13. The spirit soul possesses the body and is within the body. This is the real analysis. The soul never mixes with the bodily elements, although the soul is within the body. It is separate and always pure. one must analyze and understand his self. This is self-realization. Niti-niti is the analytical process of rejecting mato. By expertly conducting such analysis, one can understand where the soul is. One who is not expert, however, cannot distinguish gold from earth, nor the soul from the body. Dehas to sarva sangato jagatastor iti dveda atraeva mirgya puruso niti niti ti ata twajan. There are two kinds of bodies for the individual soul. A gross body made of five gross elements and a subtle body made of three subtle elements. Within these bodies, however, is the spirit soul. One must find the soul by analysis, saying, this is not it, this is not it. Thus one must separate spirit from matter. Hare Krishna. So, first of all, thank you all for allowing me the opportunity to recite the Srimad Bhagavatam class for today. So, in the initial stage of spiritual realization, this is a very important step. This is an ABC step, or the formula of understanding the principle of numbers 1, 2, 3. This is a very important part. It is so important that if we do not understand this foundation of spiritual life, then whatever we know will be wrong. It's like you don't know that 1 + 1 = 2, but you're doing a very big equation. And in the beginning you made that one mistake that 1 + 1 = 2, but everything else you do is right. At the end, the answer is wrong. Cannot be right. So much is this foundation of spiritual life that we have to understand clearly that the soul is not the body and the body is not the soul. They are completely separated and they can never become one. They cannot become one in the past, they cannot become one now, and in the future they cannot become one. There is no possibility that the body can become the soul. There is no possibility that the body can live eternally like that of the soul. So, it is a very complicated subject matter at the same time. It is so much a complicated subject matter that in spite you can regularly hear that you are not the body, still there's so many complex situations about this body that force you to accept that you're this body. This body, again and again, is being affected by all kinds of urges. And when these urges, they are very prominent in the body, it sometimes makes us feel as if we want to die. It makes us feel as though That if we don't fulfill these urges, we are going to die. And death is something that I do not want. So this creates a situation of a panic. This urge is very strong. I have to fulfill this urge. Just like the urge of a hunger or thirst. You are accustomed to eating 3 meals a day at a certain time. And then for some reason, at this particular time, your meals is not there. And this urges is there within the body. So, you immediately begin to feel as if you don't get that particular meal at this particular time, it is like you're going to die. So, we are forced, the material energy is bombarding. It's like your head is in a bell and somebody is hitting it on the outside. They're not hitting you directly, but the impact that is coming from this bell is entering into you and is striking you so hard. So, in spite we accept, we hear that we're not these bodies, these urges, the pains of this body, these different sensations that take place in this body, force us again and again to think on this platform of that we are this body, Mamiti, that I'm this body. And sometimes if someone is trying to explain to us that you are not this body, when you reflect in these circumstances of what it means to suffer, it's very difficult to comprehend that you are something that is completely aloof from this suffering. That is the nature of the soul. He's completely aloof from suffering. But because he is in this dreamlike state, he thinks he is this body. And because he thinks he is this body, he thinks that he is suffering. So this body, it exists. And it is a product of material elements. And it has been awarded to the soul. And the soul, when this body has been awarded to him, he's like a person go and rent an apartment. Renting this apartment, he is like the owner of the apartment. But he is only like the owner of this apartment as long as he pays rent. If he does not pay rent, then the landlord can put him out. So we, in the same way, is being awarded this body based on our previous lives, karma, being awarded this body. And as soon as that is expired, then we have to leave the body. So, but while we have this body, we sometimes we feel so much that we are the body and feel so much that we can do so many things. But this is only because we are riding on the chariot of the mind. It's only with the mind. This mind, it reflects this independent nature of the soul. It only reflects. It's why you can sit here now and think about being so many places, Somebody may do you something in which your mind you can do him so many violent things, although you may not even able to look at him carefully. Because you are out of fear, if you look at him, he may do you something. But in your mind, you can do him so many things. So this is our conditioned nature. The body is a conditioned situation. When you have this body, the eyes, it is dependent on light in order to see. Although the soul is not matter, and matter is dead, inert, is dead matter, nevertheless, the soul, he's like a great magician. He will be able to see to by consciousness, he's able to project through the eyeballs, and he, with the help of light, he can see objects. But on his own, the soul is not able to do that. He is like a person being awarded what you call like a power of attorney. I have my home, and I would not be in this country for long. And I award you power of attorney. Take care of my home. If you want to sell it, you sell it. You want to rent it, you rent it. So I give you power of attorney. You can do whatever you want. So similarly, the Jiva Atma in this body, he has this power of attorney. He's been granted this facility by the Lord to use this body. But, unfortunately, because we become a product of our environment, isn't it? We are all product of our environment. Just like you're in this environment where there is devotees, we offer obeisances, we get up in the Mangal Artik, we sit and we chant japa, we come to Bhagavatam class. So you become a product of this environment. And even though you may not feel like doing it, but because everybody is doing it, you participate. Become a product of this environment. So, but if you was outside with people doing something that is non-devotional and for a long time, then you will also become a product of that environment. And you will be driven that way. Unless you turn away from that environment, you will become a product of that environment. So the Jiva Atma, he becomes a product of the environment of materialistic people. People who are in bodily consciousness of life. Just as we see, when the Jiva Atma come into this world, he come into this world and somebody is saying that I am your mother and I am your father. This is your brother and this is your sister. And based on this body you have, your name is so and so. You belong to this family. You belong to this home. You're within this environment. This is your environment. And because we don't know anything more, we trust these people. And we accept what they're saying. Why we shouldn't trust them? Why you shouldn't trust them? They're providing your necessities. Because you are helpless as an infant, they're providing your necessities. And if they don't give you, you won't get. So you have to trust them. So we become a product of this environment. Eventually we become habituated to this misdirected condition. It becomes a habit in us. It's like we see that we come to devotion or service. And even after some time, we find that there, because we were a product of certain environment, certain behavior, certain conduct still becomes part of us because it becomes a habit. So we become habituated, the jiva atma becomes habituated to bodily concept of life. So, when he's habituated to this bodily concept of life, although he's constantly suffering, he's always suffering. There's no time that he's not suffering. The only thing he experienced, maybe, is a temporary relief from suffering. But in ignorance, he calls this relief happiness. But the material body cannot facilitate the jiva with happiness. Why? Because they are completely opposed in existence. The jiva atma, he is an eternal existence, whereas the body is a temporary existence. The jiva atma is full of bliss, whereas the body is full of ignorance. The jiva atma, he is full of knowledge, whereas the body is full of ignorance. But because of being part of his environment, he's thinking he's part of this ignorance. And he's trying diligently to enjoy this ignorance, this bodily concept of life. So, this human form of life, when the jiva atma have that great facility, that great benediction, that great boon to attain this human form of life, is simply for this purpose that he can again become reestablished in his real identity as a spirit soul, jiva atma. So, I was in Canada once and was talking to one university student. So, I was explaining this circumstance that we're not this body, we're the soul. So he was going along with this, he was accepting this. But then when I begin to explain to him about the responsibility of having this human form of life, that is to have this understanding, to make every effort to cultivate this understanding and to become situated, then he says, that's too much responsibility. I prefer to be an animal. Because animal, I don't have no responsibility. So just see how the powerful effect of the illusionary energy. He was going along, he was understanding that he's a spirit soul. But when it comes to the point of responsibility, he says, no, better I be an animal. Because with the animal body, there's no responsibility. So then I says, but when you have an animal body, you're a victim of circumstance. Just imagine somebody kill you just to take out a photograph. Somebody kill you because today they want to cook barbecue. And you have no choice. Would you want to be an animal like that? No. So you might as well be a human being. At least there is some rules, there is some laws to protect you. So the human form of life is meant for this purpose, that we can somehow or the other be able to pinpoint the soul within the body. How does the soul exist within the body? How it is that the soul is not the body, but he exists within the body, and he's able to manipulate this body. And that this body is dead matter. Nevertheless, although this body is dead matter, I can conceive urges. I can feel pain. I can feel different kinds of sensation. Some of these sensations, they feel good, and some feel bad. How it is these things can take place? So the jiva atma, the soul, he resides within the body, and he floats within the life air within the body. And as Krishna explained, just as the one sun situated in the sky distributes its light everywhere. Similarly, this Jiva Atma within the body, he distributes his consciousness throughout the body. When he distributes his consciousness throughout the body, therefore, at that time, he is able to feel pain. He is able to experience different kinds of sensation. So, but although he is able to experience these sensations, it is these sensations he is only able to experience them because he is conscious. That's his nature. But the body itself is not conscious. Only when the Jiva Atma is within the body can he respond to different sensations. Just like heat, if heat is too close to the body, when the Jiva Atma is within the body, the soul within the body, he'll respond. But if the soul is not within the body, he will not respond. While the soul is within the body, you will consider that someone is being violent to you and they burn you, cause pain. But when the Jiva Atma is not within the body, then actually nothing is really taking place. It's just a transformation. Because the body comprised of these elements, so fire cannot burn sparks. So because these elements, the bodies of the same nature of these elements, therefore these elements, they cannot affect the same elements, earth, water, fire within the body. They cannot affect them. The body only undergoes a transformation, changing because of intense heat or water, the body goes through this transformation. But they actually does not affect the body. But if the soul is within the body, because he is conscious of the body, because he is projecting his consciousness in this body, then he is able to respond. He is able to enable the body to respond. That means if there's too much heat, I'll respond. I'll withdraw from this heat. If there's too much cold, I'll withdraw. If there is something that is very nice and tasty, then I'll indulge. If something is very not nice and tasty, it's very hot, then I'll withdraw. So then this is all is taking place because the Jiva Atma is within the body. But if the same circumstance is taking place when the Jiva Atma is not within the body, then it's just transformation and there is no one to complain. So sometimes we meet, when preaching, we meet intellectual people, they would make the statement that, can you show me the soul? I don't see the soul. I can't see the soul. And if I can't see the soul, I don't accept the soul. So one guy was asking this question, and I asked him the question, can you see your brains? No. So then you don't have brains because you can't see it. Because it's logical. If things that I don't see don't exist, you don't see your brains. So you don't have brains. And because you don't have brains, you can't understand the subject matter. Because the subject matter is meant for people who have sufficient brain substance. So, but we can analyze the situation. Sometimes, when I also was in Canada, and there was one youth, he was with his mother, and his mother was kind of bragging on him because he was asking questions, and the mother was bragging on him and saying that, nobody defeats him. Okay. That's okay. So we were going and he was asking questions and we were going and we was going. So at a certain point he turned and he said to me, he says, you religious people are just dogmat. I said, really? I said, well, do you ask me any question? And if I can, in a clear way, explain the answer to you, then I'm not dogmatic. Dogmatic means that I just say something that I believe and I have no explanation. But I can explain to you, ask me any question about what I'm saying, and I'm going to explain to you in a very theoretical way. And I'm going to make it very clear and give you the finest detail. Therefore, this is not a dogmatic process. This is a scientific process. And you have to come on board in order to understand this science. So why you cannot understand this science right now? Sometimes as devotees, we want, when we're preaching, we want people to understand what we're saying. So why they're not understanding? One of the factors why people don't understand, and we also have a problem, why they don't understand, is that just like, take for instance, a person who will have a bachelor degree. How long did he take to get a bachelor degree? Did he just go meet a professor and the professor just say, well, it's like this and like that and get a bachelor degree? No. So if you're preaching to someone, you can't expect to tell him you're not the body, you're a spirit soul, and the spirit soul exists within the body and expect him to understand. No, he cannot. In order to get a degree, it takes you... I was amazed one day I was telling the same point to a college student. I said, it takes you about 20 to 30 years before you get a degree. He says, no, I just go to college in about 5 years. I said, well, where you been before college? You had to go from prep B. You had to start from instant, from 5 year old. You had to start school. And this is all your preparation in order to get that degree. It takes time. It takes lots of years, 20, 30 years. So, similarly, when we come to Krishna consciousness, we are not going to click your finger and expect to understand this whole science of Krishna consciousness. Because you're hearing every day that you're a spirit soul. It's a gradual process. And the more we apply ourselves to the process, the more we follow the process, the more we stay in the association of the devotees, the more we hear the scriptures, the more we chant our rounds, the more we become diligent in the process, then gradually, we will be able to see the light of Krishna consciousness. We're able to perceive our existence as a spirit soul within the body. But when we come to this platform that we can now understand. When you come to this platform that you now understand that you are not this body, you're a spirit soul, try to understand. That is when you wake up. That is when we wake up. So when you wake up in the morning, what you do? You got to start doing something. You got to go and start taking a bath. You got to start doing a lot of things. You got to start performing activity. So similarly, when we wake up, now that we are not spirit soul, so now you've been relieved from the clutches of Maya. Now is the time that we have to become active. Because being active means now we have to understand that I am not this body, then who am I? I'm Krishna Nitya Das. I'm an eternal servant of Krishna. And as an eternal servant of Krishna, what is my nature? My nature is to render service. This is your nature. To render service unto Krishna. So, and we can't avoid this service attitude. Because this service attitude
helps the living entity to express his love for Krishna. See, you can't express your love for someone without some service. Because you can tell me every day, all day, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. It has no meaning unless there is some expression of service. So when we come to this platform of understanding that I am not this body, I am spirit soul, that's when we wake up and that's when we have to understand that I am eternal servant of Krishna, and now we have to engage in the eternal servant of Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Is there any question? Don't make difficult ones though.
In psychology and psychiatrists, they divide mind into three parts. conscious mind, subconscious mind and unconscious mind. Such a division is not referred in any of our Shastra according to my knowledge. So what is your comment about this?
Actually, I didn't understand clearly. Somebody can explain a little clearly what he said.
Should I say again?
Yeah.
Psychologists divide our mind into three parts.
Yeah.
10% is conscious mind, 80% is subconscious mind, and 10% is unconscious mind.
Yeah.
That type of division we do not find in our Shastra.
Yeah.
Or at least I don't know whether it is there or not. So what is your explanation about this?
There's one devotee that works in a psychologist department. So we were discussing about the function of these people. So then I made the point that when you're mad, right? Person is mad, obviously he don't know what is right and what is wrong. Right? We understand there's a basic principle. It says, who feels it, knows it. Right? Who feels it, knows it. If you stick me with a pen, I feel it. I know it, the pain. So similarly, if a madman don't know what is right, what is wrong, he don't know anything, he cannot explain what is his pains and what is his suffering, how it is that the psychologist can understand what is his problem to diagnose what is best for him? So if the psychologist can diagnose what is good for him, it means that both of them is in the same category, mad people. Because none of them know. Just like the point he says, that 10% is unconscious mind, but really it should be 90% unconscious mind. Because this is people's general condition. Even 99% unconscious. Even we are devotees, if you look at your own self, you can see there's so many things that takes place about your body that you don't know. Your eyes blink so often that you can't even remember. You didn't even think about it. Sometimes you didn't even think for the whole day that your eyes blink, and it was blinking all the time. So that means you are actually more or less unconscious all day. So, unless one possesses this Atma Jnana, this knowledge of the soul,
whatever his explanation about the body is in a deluded state. He's deluded. He doesn't know much. He may make some. That's why we find that people engrossed in material condition, they are always changing. Whatever they are saying, whatever circumstances, whatever they make, whatever they do, it's always changing. One person said this today, and after a few years, and he gets an award for saying it. And then, in a few more years, somebody gets an award for saying something, just what he said, but in a different way. They say the same thing in a different way. They're always changing. So, what should we do in this circumstance? We have these two people. We have people who are engrossed in bodily concept of life. They're speaking so much about the body. And we have these people who are spiritually situated. They speak so much about the soul, and they also speak about the body. Who should we believe? Who should you follow? Well, we should try to understand that we have to follow someone. But what is the criteria for who should I follow? The criteria for who should I follow is one basic principle. Is that when a person is in bodily concept of life, his whole condition is driven by the urges of the body. He has to fulfill the demands of these urges. So since he has to fulfill the demands of these urges, whatever he is doing is profiteering. This is what bodily concept life is. Everything you do in bodily concept of life is meant to profit the body. What are you trying to profit? You're trying to profit these four basic principles. Profit for these four basic principles. To provide for your eating, your sleeping, your mating and defending. That's all you're doing. But when one is situated on the spiritual platform, then his body experiences these same urges too. But he is not driven by them. He doesn't try to fulfill them. He gives the body what the body needs. And then he has higher duties to perform. So this is why we should hear from spiritual authorities. Because they are not driven to fulfill the demands of the urges of the body. So we should pay attention to these people. They sometimes may get some formulas right. They may get a little thing right. Prabhupada used the term, he says, from the little they know, they speculate upon what they don't know. Hare Krishna. Any other question? Hare Krishna, Mataji.
You said that when the soul leaves the body has simply undergone a transformation. What's that transformation?
I beg your pardon?
Say when the soul leaves the body, it's only a transformation that has occurred to the body. Can you explain what's that transformation?
Yeah. It deteriorates. As soon as the soul leaves the body, it begins to deteriorate. The elements begin to reconcile back. That is, water goes back to water, the air goes back to the air. These things take place when the soul leaves the body. It transforms, it changes. You put it in a fire, it will change. So, this transformation takes place when the soul leaves the body.
I have another question. It's about superiority complex and inferiority complex. Can you say something about this?
Inferiority complex means that you feel somebody is superior to you and you create some kind of an envy that you don't like them because whatever reason. And the superiority complex is that you're in a superior position, or you're in a position of make-believe that I am superior to others. But these are all just bodily concept of life. Because the Jivatma, they're all spiritual beings, spiritual existence. They're all eternal. So there's no real position of them in their nature of eternality. There is no superiority. We're all equal in terms of eternity. So there is no need. This superiority that we strive for is all based on bodily concept of life. And the bodily concept of life is something that we have to try to give up. We have the body? Yes. We have to take care of the body? Yes. But we have to take care of the body in such a way that it should enable us to understand that we are not the body, we are spirit soul. Not that we should forget the concept, our identity as a spirit soul, but the body should help us to remember that we are a spirit soul. So, I guess we can try to say a few words on the disappearance day of these two acharyas, Srila Jiva Goswami, first of all. Srila Jiva Goswami is the son of one of the brother of Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, Anupam. Srila Jiva Goswami, as a young child, Lord Chaitanya happened to place his feet on his head and said that he will be a great philosopher. Our Gaudiya Vaishnav society, after Srila Jiva Goswami, is very much indebted to him. We are all very much indebted to Srila Jiva Goswami. Actually, he is the real Sankirtan leader. Book distribution. He is that devotee who started this book distribution process with his students at that time. Narottam Das Thakur, Shamananda, and what's the other devotee? Srinivas Charya. So he sent them with books to go and distribute. So we are indebted to Srila Jiva Goswami. Srila Jiva Goswami, it is explained that there have never been anyone more scholarly than Srila Jiva Goswami. There will never be anyone as scholarly as him. Srila Jiva Goswami, he is the editor of most of the book of his spiritual master, Srila Rupa Goswami, and Srila Sanatana Goswami. He's the editor of their books. Even Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, he edits some of his books also. Srila Jiva Goswami, he has put together the Sandarbhas. If one read these Sandarbhas, then it will give us a little glimpse into the vast learning, the ocean this vast ocean of learning of Srila Jiva Goswami. And his devotedness to as a devotee in Krishna consciousness, his vast understanding of Krishna consciousness, and his and how much he understands the supremacy of Krishna. So, Srila Jiva Goswami, after the disappearance of Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, he became like the acharya in Vrindavan among the Vaishnava sect. So today is a very nice day that, and Srila Prabhupada also, many of his purports came from Srila Jiva Goswami's explanation. If you read some of the Sandarbhas, you go in with some of these verses and points that Srila Jiva Goswami would illuminate from a verse, and you go into some of these same purports in Prabhupada, you will see Prabhupada will be illuminating the same subject matter. So, so we owe a lot to Srila Jiva Goswami as among the six Goswamis. Of course, we are considered to be followers of Rupa and Raghunath. But this Srila Jiva Goswami, he's that person that can bring us to that shelter of Rupa and Raghunath. So today is a day that we can try to reflect on his personality and pray to him to help us in Krishna consciousness, to help us to understand the philosophy in Krishna consciousness, so that we can become more situated in the process of devotional service. And then there is Jagadish Pandit. Jagadish Pandit, there's one prominent pastimes, Lord Chaitanya, that Jagadish Pandit, Lord Chaitanya as an infant was crying. He didn't want it to eat. And the only thing he wanted to eat at that time, it was an Ekadasi day, it was the grains that was cooked at the home in Jagadish Pandit's home. It's what he wanted to eat. So when he got that grains, then he stopped crying. So Jagadish Pandit, he was amazed. How can this little kid understand that I today is Ekadasi and I cook grains? So, and Lord Chaitanya in Puri invited Jagadish to come to help in the distribution of the holy name. So this is the so today is also Jagadish Pandit disappearance day, and we can pray to these acharyas to help us in our. This is Lord Chaitanya requested Jagadish Pandit to come and help with the Sankirtan movement. We can help, pray and ask him to help us to improve the quality of our chanting, hearing and chanting. Because Lord Chaitanya is indeed very pleased with him. So that we can develop greater attraction for this chanting. Because the struggle we are having, our real struggle in Krishna consciousness is due to lack of attraction. Because we lack attraction to hearing about Krishna or chanting about Krishna. Because we lack this attraction. But why it is we lack this attraction? Since we are eternal soul. Since I'm an eternal soul, this attraction should something be natural for me. It is natural. But the problem is that we again have become habituated by the material circumstances. It becomes a bad habit. And because this bad habit of taking us over as a spirit soul, we have forgotten our attraction to Krishna. So the more we are able to become attractive to Krishna consciousness, attractive to this hearing and chanting about Krishna, the easier it is for us to become situated in Krishna consciousness. So I guess I can stop here. Anybody want to add anything? Or we can stop? Jagadguru Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Jiva Goswami ki jai. Jagadish Pandit ki jai. Sisi Gaur Nitai ki jai. All glories to assembled devotees.